sticking around, a little bitter end. I'll try to keep it short. Okay, so I'll talk about fractional quantum Hall effect and featureless mod insulators. In case you are interested in details after the talk, this is the reference. Okay, so this is a brief outline of the talk. So I'll introduce the subject, try to tell you why this connection between fractional quantum Hall effect and mod insulators is interesting, and why should you care, and what is the connection. And so in the second part of my talk, I will actually try to make this connection concrete. Okay? So I'll show you that fractional quantum Hall liquid of bosons in the lowest Landau level maps onto a model of a mod insulator, featureless mod insulator, on a triangular lattice. Okay. Okay, so what's the connection between fractional quantum Hall liquids and mod insulators? So at least superficially, this connection is extremely simple. Okay, so what is a fractional quantum Hall liquid? So we take lowest Landau level, right? So lowest Landau level has this huge number of degenerate single particle states, which is equal to the number of flux quanta through the sample, right? And then we start filling these degenerate single particle states with repulsively interacting particles. So the particles can be either fermions or bosons, it doesn't matter. In my talk, for convenience, they will be bosons. Okay, so I'll be talking about fractional quantum Hall effect of bosons. And so then at some rational filling fractions, which are equal to the ratio of the number of particles to the number of flux quanta, right? The ground states of this system are incompressible liquids with topological order, okay? So this is what fractional quantum Hall is in a couple of words. So if you think about this mod insulator is, again, at least superficially, a very similar thing, right? So in a mod insulator, you have some lattice, right? Let's say a two-dimensional square lattice. To every lattice site, you have, at every lattice site, there is a Vanier orbital associated with this site. And then you fill these degenerate Vanier orbitals with, again, these repulsively interacting particles, okay? And at certain filling fractions, which are ratios of the number of particles to the number of sites, you may get, depending on the relative magnitude of the interactions and kinetic energy, you may get incompressible mod insulator ground states, okay? So there is an important difference, of course, between fractional quantum Hall liquids and mod insulators. So fractional quantum Hall liquid is a liquid, which means it's featureless. A mod insulator, if I take a mod insulator of bosons at a general fractional filling factor, it will typically not be a liquid. It will typically be a crystal, which means it will break lattice symmetry. So for the simplest example, if I take bosons on a square lattice at filling factor 1/2, right, then for most reasonable interactions, the bosons, if they want to localize, they will localize in this pattern, right, where every boson does not have any nearest neighbors, just to minimize the nearest neighbor interaction energy. So the connection is really not between fractional quantum Hall liquid and any mod insulator, but between fractional quantum Hall liquid and a featureless mod insulator. So a mod insulator that does not break any lattice symmetries, okay? And so this is why this connection is interesting. So as I'm sure all of you know, it's a very important fundamental problem in condensed matter physics, the search for featureless mod insulators, so spin liquids, as they're also called, okay? So we know that it's, even theoretically, it's quite difficult to, say, write down a specific Hamiltonian whose ground state will be a spin liquid, okay? And in general, sort of the general features that such Hamiltonian must have to realize a spin liquid ground state are not known, okay? And so I believe that this connection to fractional quantum Hall effect may be useful for this, okay? Okay, so let me, this is certainly, this idea about the connection between fractional quantum Hall effect and mod insulators is certainly not new. So let me just mention some sort of precursor related work. So it was probably first spelled out explicitly in this famous work of Calmer and Laughlin in the 80s. So they proposed that the ground state of a triangular lattice Heisenberg antiferromagnet can be described by a new Hausmann-Hopf Laughlin liquid wave function. So of course, in this case, we know that this doesn't work. We know that the triangular lattice antiferromagnet actually orders, right? But still, a Calmeyer-Laughlin spin liquid, which is a spin liquid which, you know, in addition to topological order, also has spontaneous broken time reversal symmetry, is one of the possible spin liquids in two dimensions that can be realized. And so you can view my work that I will describe as sort of as a way to construct a parent Hamiltonian for a Calmeyer-Laughlin spin liquid. Okay? There was also a much more recent work on fractional quantum Hall liquid on a thin torus by Danghai Li, Gerald Moore, and co-workers. This is also closely related to what I will talk about. So even though this connection between fractional quantum Hall effect and Mott insulators is at least on the surface, is very simple, it's actually not that easy to make this connection explicit and concrete. Okay? And so the main reason for this is really the difficulty with notation. Okay? So the problem is that the standard choices for the lowest Landau level orbital eigenstates that we use, like Landau gauge orbitals, they're all delocalized. Okay? What it means is that the energy penalty for W occupying such an orbital always vanishes in thermodynamic limit, right? Then it makes very hard to think of the problem of this problem in terms of a Mott insulator, right? Because we usually think of Mott physics as being due to prohibiting double occupation of some sites or maybe nearest neighbor groups of sites, right? So then, if you have orbitals whose energy penalty for double occupation vanishes, this Mott physics is completely obscured in this such notation. Okay. So therefore, what's needed to make the connection, so the main step, really, is to change notation, is to choose a lowest Landau level basis, which consists not of delocalized orbitals, but of sort of one-year-like orbitals, right? Orbitals which are localized in all directions in the 2D plane. So kind of like one-year orbitals in an insulator. So here we immediately run into a problem. So it's well known from the work of Thouless and other people that, in fact, choosing such a basis of exponentially localized wave functions in the lowest Landau level is impossible. So this turns out to be fundamentally incompatible with this important topological property of a Landau level, a non-zero Chern number. Okay? But so for our purposes, this is okay. So I don't really need exponentially localized orbitals, as long as I can find orbitals which are normalizable and have finite energy cost for double occupation, I'm fine. Okay? And so it was shown in this very nice paper by Rajba and co-workers that it indeed actually it's possible to choose such a basis of quasi-localized Vanier-like functions in the lowest Landau level. So they are normalizable. They have finite energy cost for double occupation, but they have this 1 over r squared tail, okay? And so it's this tail that ensures the preservation of the non-trivial topology of the Landau level. So here is briefly how this basis of magnetic Vanier states is constructed. So we start from, we choose a peak symmetric gauge, okay? So take eigenfunction, single particle eigenfunction in the symmetric gauge corresponding to zero angular momentum, right? So this wave function is very nicely localized, right? And it looks like an atomic wave function which is centered at the origin, right? So then what we do is we take this wave function and we translate, we use magnetic translation operators, right? Translation operators with extra Aronoff-Bohm phase factors to make them commute with the Hamiltonian. So we use magnetic translation operators to translate this function to sites of, in principle, any two-dimensional Bravais lattice. So the only restriction on this lattice is that there is exactly one flux quantum per unit cell of this lattice. Okay? So this accomplishes two things. First, this restriction. First of all, you preserve the correct counting of states, of course, in the lowest Landau level. And second thing, so you know that in general, translations in different directions in the lowest, in the presence of perpendicular magnetic field do not commute, right? But it turns out that actually the lattice translations by basis vectors of such a lattice, which has exactly one flux quantum per unit cell, these actually do commute, okay? And so this allows you to introduce, starting from this, introduce, crystal momentum, define block functions, and then ultimately Vanier functions, okay? Okay, so by doing this translation operation, you get a set of these quasi-atomic wave functions, right? So for reasons that I will explain later, it turns out to be the best choice to choose this lattice to be triangular lattice, okay? So this set of functions is not orthogonal, of course, right? And it actually turns out to be overcomplete. So these functions satisfy this amazing identity at every point in space, okay? And so this will play some role in what I will talk about. And so this is actually the origin of the non-trivial topological properties of Bloch states that can be defined from these quasi-atomic states. Okay. Okay. So given this set of quasi-atomic orbitals defined on a triangular lattice, I can use the standard procedure from Ashcroft and Merman to first construct Bloch states out of linear combinations of these atomic orbitals. Right. So these Bloch states are labeled by momentum, which belongs to the first Brillouin zone of the triangular lattice, right? And then I can do inverse Fourier transform to get Vanier states, okay? So these Vanier states form a complete orthonormal set of states by construction, okay? The only difference from the usual Vanier states in the crystal is that they have this power law tail, okay? Okay, so given such a set of localized functions, localized eigenfunctions in the lowest Landau level, I can write down any Hamiltonian of, let's say, interacting bosons projected to the lowest Landau level. Okay, so this is how it will generally look like, right? So kinetic energy is just a constant in the lowest Landau level, so all you have is interactions. So this matrix elements can be easily calculated. Let's say that if I take interactions to be just delta function interactions, I can easily calculate these matrix elements in general numerically, but some of their properties can be seen even analytically. So for example, it's easy to show that these matrix elements are short range in the sense that they fall off with distance between the sides at long distances as 1 over r to the 6, okay? So I think any reasonable person will agree that this is short range, so that I can actually cut off these matrix elements to, you know, just a few nearest neighbor distances. However, even if I do that, even if I do cut off these matrix elements to even just nearest neighbors, then there is still a huge number of different matrix elements in this Hamiltonian. And so which are all of the same order of magnitude and which all compete with each other. So in this form, this rewriting is completely useless, okay? Even though in principle I have accomplished what I wanted to do, right? I mapped bosons in the lowest Landau level to bosons on a lattice, which is described by this Hamiltonian, okay? But the Hamiltonian is horrible, okay? But so it turns out that there is actually a hidden, very nice hidden symmetry in this Hamiltonian. Okay, so it can be seen in the following way. So I can use this amazing Perelomov identity to easily show that the zeros of the magnetic Bloch states actually themselves form a triangular lattice with exactly one flux quantum per unit cell. Okay, so zeros are located at these points, right? So basically the momentum of the block state simply labels the center of mass position of this lattice of zeros. So this means that I can identify the magnetic block states simply with Abrikosov vortex lattices, right? Basically because, you know, wave functions in the lowest Landau level are uniquely defined by their zeros up to phases, up to phase factors. Then, so I know that the ground state of this Hamiltonian, ground state of interacting bosons in the lowest Landau level at high filling factors is the Abrikosov vortex lattice, right? So then I know that the ground state of my Hamiltonian at high filling factors corresponds to condensation of bosons into a state with a particular momentum k in the first Brillouin zone. Okay? Okay, so what consequence does this have? So first of all, what does it mean in the language of the magnetic Vanier orbitals, right? So if I transform my boson creation operator from magnetic block states to magnetic Vanier states, you can see that condensation of bosons into a state with a particular momentum means uniform phase winding in the language of magnetic Vanier orbitals, right? Where the phase winding rate is k. Okay? So Abrikosov vortex lattices in the Vanier representation simply correspond to states with all possible uniform phase winding along the basis directions of the triangular lattice. Okay, so this has a couple of important consequences. First consequence, so if I take an Abrikosov vortex lattice state and look at small phase fluctuations around the Abrikosov vortex lattice state, right? So if I try to write down an imaginary time action which describes these fluctuations, right? It won't have the term which is usual in superfluids, which is gradient of the phase squared, right? Because all uniform phase gradients are degenerate, okay? So then the lowest order gradient term that's allowed in this action is actually grad theta, grad squared theta squared, okay? So it follows that the dispersion of phase fluctuations in an Abrikosov vortex lattice state is actually quadratic in momentum and not linear like in usual superfluids, okay? This is a well-known result. It has been obtained by a number of authors, so most recently by Sinova, Hanna, and McDonald. So you may jump to the conclusion that since it's quadratic in momentum, it's not superfluid. This is not necessarily true. So this only means absence of Bose-Einstein condensation, but the superfluid stiffness in the sense of vortices being localized may still be finite, okay? But so for my purposes, the most important consequence of the lack of this term in the phase action is that actually its lack is a consequence of an emergent conservation law, okay? And this emergent conservation law is a conservation of the center of mass of the bosons in any collision process, okay? So this is how you see it. So I write down this Hamiltonian again, but not in the Vanier basis, but in the block basis. Okay? Then, so since block states just correspond to Abrikosov vortex lattices translated in plane, right, they have to be related to each other by magnetic translations, again, up to phase factors. And so this is the exact relation. From this, it follows that this interaction matrix element in the magnetic block basis actually does not depend on this common momentum k as long as momenta q and q prime are small, okay? So what it means when you translate this back into the magnetic Vanier basis, what it means is that Hamiltonian in the magnetic Vanier basis has this center of mass conservation, just because this common momentum k couples precisely to, you know, R M1 plus M2 minus M3 plus M4. And when the matrix element doesn't depend on it, the sum over K simply gives you delta function, right? So basically, we arrive at the conclusion that that these matrix elements actually have this center of mass conservation, which is emergent, which is true at long wavelengths. Okay? So this, of course, immediately limits the number of terms in the Vanier basis Hamiltonian, right? And so now, if I make an additional assumption, which I believe is justified, that I can only retain sort of shortest range matrix elements, right? So this is justified by the fact that they fall off as 1 over r to the 6 with distance. Then I arrive at this very simple Hamiltonian, okay? So this Hamiltonian has the following terms. So there are repulsion terms, right, just on site, and nearest neighbor and maybe further neighbor. And so the only kinetic term is this ring exchange term, okay? So the significance of the ring exchange term is that this is the shortest range term on triangular lattice which conserves the center of mass of the bosons, right? The ring exchange simply means that I take one of these four-side plaquettes of the triangular lattice. And so the process is that, so if the bosons sit on these two opposite vertices, I just hop them to these two vertices. So obviously the center of mass of the pair is conserved in the process, right? And so my claim is that whenever the original system of bosons, interacting bosons in the lowest Landau level, is at such a filling factor that the ground state is an incompressible quantum Hall liquid, the ground state of this at the same filling factor, and so here the filling factor is just the ratio of the number of particles to the number of sites, right, because the number of sites is equal to the number of magnetic flux quanta, so the ground state of this will be a featureless mod insulator, right? An incompressible state, again, which does not break any symmetries. Okay, so let me just do a very simple sanity check, right? So let's take this Hamiltonian and look at the high filling factor limit, right? So in this case, I know what ground state this should have, right? It should be an Abrikosov vortex lattice, right? So in this case, the boson operators simply become C numbers, right, at high filling factors. Then the repulsion terms simply act to make the density uniform on all sides, right? So then the ground state simply depends on the phases of the bosons, right? And it's very easy to show that the ground state of this classical Hamiltonian on triangular lattice indeed consists of all uniform phase windings, of states with all possible uniform phase gradients, okay? So this was shown in this paper by Balance and Paramikanti first. And as I've shown you already, this precisely corresponds to Abrikosov vortex lattice, okay? So this mapping definitely works at high filling factors. My claim is that it continues to work all the way to filling factors of order 1. Okay, so let me just consider a simple example. So let's take bosons in the lowest Landau level at filling factor 1/2, right? So in this case, we know that for contact interactions between the bosons, the exact ground state is the nu equals 1/2 Laughlin liquid with this wave function, right? So if I take my Hamiltonian now, I can simplify it even further at filling factor 1/2. So if I assume that U is the dominant interaction scale, which makes sense, right, then I can simply consider the bosons to be hardcore, right? There is no double occupancy. So then such hardcore bosons can be mapped onto spin 1/2, right? And then I arrive at this very simple spin 1/2 Hamiltonian. I have I have an interaction between Z components of the spin, so this is simply an antiferromagnetic Ising model on triangular lattice, plus I have this easy plane ring exchange term, okay? So we know what the ground state of this is when K is equal to 0, right? So the ground state has extensive degeneracy, finite entropy per site. So my claim is that when you turn on a small but non-zero k, the ground state of this Hamiltonian will be a gapped spin liquid. Okay? How much time do I have? Okay. Okay, so a slightly subtle issue here is the issue of the ground state degeneracy of this state. And so this will lead me to the connection to this Calmette-Laughlin spin liquid. So notice that this Hamiltonian is explicitly time-reversal invariant, right? So all of these coupling constants are real. So the information about the breaking of time-reversal symmetry by magnetic field is not contained in, it can be easily shown that it's, this information is not contained in the center of mass-conserving matrix elements. It's only contained in the Vanier functions themselves and in the matrix elements which do not conserve the center of mass, okay? So these matrix elements, as I've shown, are irrelevant for sort of long-distance physics, okay? So in this case, if this is indeed a spin liquid the quasi-particles of the Laughlin liquid carry a fractional charge of 1/2, basically, right? So if the same is true here, right, if the quasi-particles here are also carry a fraction, are fractionally charged and carry charge 1/2 of the original bosons, then the ground state of this thing has to be four-fold degenerate on the torus, okay? There is no escape from that, basically because the, so you can go between these degenerate ground states by threading flux, flux quanta through holes of the torus, okay? And since torus has two holes, there has to be two squared ground states, okay? However, we know that the ground state degeneracy of the Laughlin liquid is only twofold, right? So there seems to be a problem here. So the resolution of this problem is that the ground state of this Hamiltonian here consists of two pairs of states. In each of these pair, the time reversal symmetry is broken spontaneously, okay? So this is precisely the Calmette-Laughlin liquid. And then, since in principle the system knows about the explicit breaking of time-reversal symmetry through the small non-center of mass-conserving matrix elements, these matrix elements act as a sort of a small symmetry-breaking field which lift the degeneracy between these two pairs of states, okay? So that's how we get the correct counting of the ground states, okay? So basically my claim is that the ground state of this Hamiltonian at half filling is a Calmette-Laughlin spin liquid, which spontaneously breaks time-reversal symmetry. Okay, so let me conclude at this point. So basically what I've shown you is that interacting bosons in the lowest Landau level map onto a time-reversal invariant model of bosons on triangular lattice with string exchange and some repulsive interactions. So it's filling factors at which the bosons in the lowest Landau level condense into incompressible quantum Hall liquid states. The ground state of this lattice model is a featureless mod insulator or a spin liquid, okay? And so a nice thing about this proposal is that this Hamiltonian actually doesn't have a sign problem, okay? So all of these assertions can be checked explicitly by Monte Carlo simulations. Okay, thank you.